This podcast is brought to you by the Empowerment Project. Research proves that empowerment self-defense training makes you safer, period. I want you to have a great self-defense toolkit so you can create strong boundaries, speak with confidence, and take up all the space that you deserve in the world. We'll hear stories from survivors and find out what worked for them and why. We'll interview leaders in the field and talk about tips, concepts, and really easy things that you could do to make yourself safer and interrupt the cycle of violence. I've taught self-defense classes for over 30 years, and I promise to teach you everything I know. Ultimately, I'm going to want you to get some in-person training, but a great empowerment self-defense class is more than just the physical skills. The list of things I want to teach you is endless, so let's get to it. My name is Sylvia Smart, and welcome to the Empowerment Project. Hello, listeners. Welcome back to another episode of the Empowerment Podcast by Naga, where we fill your self-defense toolkit with all kinds of empowering and effective tools, where we talk with leaders in the industry and share self-defense success stories that help us illustrate real-life examples of tools that have worked for the courageous survivors that share them with us. There's a lot to learn here, and today is no different. Today, I am delighted to introduce you to Stephanie Sear. Stephanie has worked in the empowerment self-defense field for years, and I'd say, like all of us ESD educators, wears many hats. Most recently, she's created a unique program at San Francisco State University, which I really look forward to hearing about. Stephanie also teaches empowerment self-defense programs all around the Bay Area in Northern California, and her website, which, as always, I link to you in the description of this episode, has a call to, quote, ignite your power, and asks a question that I think is very worth asking, really. Everyone listening, ask yourself this question. Here it is. What could you do if you didn't allow fear to hold you back? Isn't that great? So think about that. And on that note, Stephanie, welcome.
Oh, hello. Thanks for having me.
You bet. I am really glad that you're here with us today. And you are a leader in this field. And I'd love to start us off by asking you to tell us about what made you who you are. What got you interested in this journey that you've been on? And what are the pieces that you feel like sharing with us about how you are, who you are, and what you're doing? Oh, big question.
Big question.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I actually get asked it a lot. What brought you to being an ESD instructor? For me, the way to sum it up is I actually was a practicing attorney, still do practice. And back in the day, even when I was in law school, I was studying martial arts. It was a great way to blow off steam after a full day of classes. And I enjoyed the physicality of it. And I started to really develop as a martial artist, learning what, you know, every martial arts has its self-defense skills, and sparring people. And I was doing that at nighttime. And then by day, I'm studying, and then I start practicing law. And in the workplace, I'm not even realizing I'm not keeping myself safe. There's all sorts of things going on, sexual harassment, sexual assault, all sorts of things that I'm handling the best I can, but I don't even in my mind define it as safety issues and the need for self-defense. And it actually took a student at the university. If I fast forward, I continue to practice martial arts. And now I'm instructing, coaching, officiating. I'm totally immersed in martial arts while still practicing law. And the grandmaster asked me to assist him in the police department at the university. And it was at the university, after one of the classes, a student came up to me and said, out of earshot of the grandmaster, that he had been assaulted, leave it at that, the weekend before, and none of the self-defense skills he had learned in class, which were all physical, had helped him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it was just a moment. It was a moment on many levels for all the martial arts listeners, because you never want to disrespect your grandmaster. In a sense, it's a knee-jerk reaction of, oh, those moves should have worked. But I didn't. I actually just sat back and listened, starting my journey of being a better coach, just really listening to a person, and told him I didn't have the answer, but I'd get back to him. And that's really where it began. Mm. And I started diving deep into studying some people I'm honored to know today, some people I haven't yet met, but really reading about the different ways we can keep ourselves safe. And the generative moment for me was while I was doing this studying, and this student and I would go in the back of the room, by the way, after classes, and we would just start working not only on bodily movement, but discussions about managing boundaries, being aware of your situational awareness, and other students started joining me. And it became very obvious I was running another form of self-defense after the self-defense class at the university.
Yeah.
And what hit me was it struck me because of that student, I will credit him to this day. It hit me that, oh, I'm not keeping myself safe in the workplace for me specifically. Yeah. And I'm a researcher. I need to have my evidence before I will present. And so I did a lot of work and a lot of shifting and adjusting. And to this day, you always are still always rewriting curriculum. Depends on who's in front of you, seeing the students, kind of the shift in students over the years. But it also hit me that as doing this work, as it built up, that it was helping other people. And why are we so hush-hush about it? This should be, to me, it should be joyful. It should be trumpeted from the top of every, you know, tower that here's a way to really take control of a very important aspect of your life and grow as a person and have more options rather than feel limited. So I could go on and on, but then apparently the head of the kinesiology department, San Francisco State, noticed some of these changes. I don't have evidence, but I suspect some students went to her and she asked me to replace the grandmaster as the self-defense instructor at the school. Mm-hmm. So that's what happened. I replaced him and I said to her, well, I'm going to completely present a new curriculum. And she said, go for it. And that's how it began, San Francisco State. And in the meantime, I was working with groups privately and adjusting depending on the group in front of me as well. So just to keep, you know, going and developing. And I've informally written an interactive textbook, which is piloting right now with the university class. And I have a lot of interest in it. So we will see about publishing it, at least in the academic world, and hopefully rolling it out to the Cal State University system.
Wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah. So
that story encompasses so much about, thank you for sharing that journey. It's really cool to see how the law, like the lawyer part of you and the martial arts part of you and the, you know, the part of you that likes to teach and coach all came together. And I was also like, what your story brought up to me is another conundrum that I feel like as empowerment self-defense teachers we have, which is when many people think about self-defense, they're like, oh yeah, I'm going to learn how to kick some butt, you know, and what your story illustrates so clearly is that that's just part of the story and that all this other stuff.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Is like so key to being able to actually use the physical parts of the tools that we learn. So they're both important. And so that was a great illustration of that. Do you have a specific self-defense success story that you'd be willing to share with us that we can learn from, like some thing or things that that you
absolutely
encountered?
Yeah, absolutely. Cool. And this actually runs right along with what you were just saying. And I've shared this over and over with my students, because what I do find, I'm in kinesiology. It is a movement class, and it's also very important in self-defense to get in touch with your body and to strengthen your body and your mind. So we're moving every class. And I often have a lot of students who initially join because they want to learn that cool way to kick.
And then
they learn quickly. Day one, this is not martial arts. This is self-defense. So what happened is I was teaching during COVID, and right spring 2020, halfway through, we went online and we started talking more about, so we weren't having the physical aspect together in the class, and we started talking more about the mental strategies. And then I go shopping one day at my local grocery store in my small town, and as I'm going up and down the aisles, this is at that time during COVID in the beginning when they'd only let X number of people in the store.
Right.
And this little store actually had arrows on the ground. You had to go up and down the aisles.
I totally remember that. Yeah.
You remember that?
Yeah.
Right. So I'm in the store, I'm masked up, which hides a lot of facial expression. And I start going up and down. I'm following. I'm a good rule follower when it makes sense to me. And I hear raised voices in another aisle, and they're sounding rough. So I speed up. I'm not supposed to, but I speed up with my cart, and I come around the bend, and I see a younger male and female with aggressively kind of, it looks like you might think they're kidding around with an elderly woman. But the elderly woman is shrinking away from them, and she looks a little scared. So I just take my cart, go down the aisle with a big smile on my face and say, "Hi, can I help out here? What's going on?" And immediately the couple turns to me, and the elderly woman just kind of glances at me and scurries away. And I hate using that word, but that's exactly what it reminded me of. I almost think sometimes like an animal scurrying away. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, good for her. And they said, "Oh, no problem. They're just talking." And they walk away from me. And my radar was up. I felt like it wasn't over. So I finish my shopping. I don't hear them or see them again. I go outside with my cart, and I'm almost to my car, and I just felt it. I felt the energy coming up behind me. I turn around with my cart between myself and whatever's behind me, and it's the couple. And there's a level of aggression. There's a level of seriousness, is a polite way to put it, to their face. And they immediately say, "We need money. Do you have any money? Give us money." And I calmly kept the cart between us, and I told them that I didn't have any money. And I feel like I'm rambling here, but I used my de-escalation skills. I maintained a calm demeanor. I explained, because I truly didn't, we're in COVID times. I just did my everything electronically. I said, "But I could walk you over to the coffee shop and buy you a cup of coffee." And that line seemed to resonate with them, seemed to embarrass them. And they said, no, that's okay. And they left. They took off across the parking lot and disappeared. And that's my success story that I shared with my students, talking about just verbal and mental strategies when you feel threatened, and not having to go to the physical. However, I will acknowledge that I kept a cart between myself and them, so they couldn't physically reach me. So I'll share that with everyone. It's not, a lot of people think you first resort is physical skills, and it's really important for people to understand that you can avoid some situations with, number one, situational awareness, and then two, verbal and mental skills.
That's such a great example, that story. Thank you. Like you said, you felt like you were rambling. I did not feel like that at all. I was in trance. Of course, I'm like, what happens next? What happens next? But you're right. I mean, that is an example of why we need to have the physical skills, because should that have escalated, should your de-escalation, your verbal skills, should they not have worked, you would have liked to have those skills in your pocket.
Just to interrupt, it's the number one questions my students had. So I finished the story and it was, but wait, what if they lunged at you or tried to grab you or reached around, you know, did you kick them, this and that? And it was, I would have used that cart. I would have gotten into my car quickly, locked the doors. I would have still tried other things before I would get physical. My only caveat for when I'm in a situation like that, and unfortunately I have been, as soon as somebody touches me, that's a game changer for me. Yeah. Then yes, it goes physical.
Yeah, when they cross that boundary. Mm-hmm. And like to add on to that and to what I was saying is that not that you even need to use them, but knowing that you can do those kicks and those strikes with your hands or your elbows or your knees or, you know, whatever, fuels your confidence so that you can look them in the eye and say, no, but I'll buy you a cup of coffee. You know, in
Absolutely.
A way, that's just like super clear. And they're like, oh. So they just mesh together so importantly, and they back those skills, the toolkit, having that kind of all-encompassing whole body, mind, spirit, emotional, mental toolkit is so important in this stuff that we teach. So I think that's a great example. Thank you. Love it. And there were other things I wanted to say about it, but I'm also so curious to hear more about this program at San Francisco State University. Is it, like, here's a question, is it for people who want to learn self-defense, empowerment self-defense? Is it for people who want to learn how to teach it? Is it, like, what's your focus and how does it look and who can come study with you?
Great question. If you want to learn empowerment self-defense and you are a student at San Francisco State University, then you can simply take the course, which is called Personal Defense on Campus, and learn empowerment self-defense. If you want to learn how to teach empowerment self-defense, if you're interested in getting involved in research around empowerment self-defense or becoming an advocate for, I say empowerment self-defense, but really interpersonal violence, then the minor would be for you. Then the minor program would be for you. It's a deeper dive. It's not simply learning self-defense. It's having a greater interest. And truly, the way this came about, once again, is from the students. So as soon as, once I started teaching, I would have students at the end of a term say, how I want to become a teacher like you. How do I do that? And I would refer them to another organization, the NWMAF, which has a wonderful teacher certification program. However, not all my students are female presenting. I'm almost exactly at 50-50 mix of being very general here of how students present. Actually, we have a very strong, also LGBTQ+ community, very well represented. I'm really fortunate to have the students I have in my classes. So they would say, once again, where do I go to become a teacher? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And as I kept doing my research, I looked at the different courses and I informally would say, why don't you look into taking the Women and Gender Studies course on women and violence and learn the history of gender-based violence and learn how it intersects with all these other aspects of our lives of race, ethnicity, socioeconomic status, ability, and so on. And they would go do it. And it was kind of hodgepodging, doing this informally without it being formalized. At the same time, I became involved with an org called ESD Global, and they were looking to form a committee. It was actually a wonderful, I can think of, still remember, it was wintertime, I was up in the mountains, and I had Judith Sedigman, who started ESD Global, contacted me, and we had this wonderful conversation. And she had been having the same idea of, wouldn't it be wonderful to have a formalized program in universities? And I said, well, this is what I've been doing informally. And so I became part of a committee for ESD Global of really just standout academics in the ESD world. And we came up with a minor program under ESD Global for universities. Meanwhile, at the same time, I was working on it at San Francisco State. It looks a little different at San Francisco State, but that is the beauty of ESD work.
Mm-hmm. It's right.
It should fit its environment, its community. Mm-hmm. And I actually am quite proud of how it's developed at San Francisco State. There's an emphasis on classes that involve stress management, conflict resolution, as well as teaching and the formal ESD instruction. So it was coming together from San Francisco State and from working with a fantastic group through ESD Global. And I'm quite pleased. Some people look at it as, oh, you know, how can I do that? I'm like, it's not a quick process. It's a university. Anyone right. in academia knows this has taken years. Yeah. This has taken years. And even having said that, we are scheduled to roll out this fall. And I am still going through, there's oversight, and there will be right through the program as it starts. There will be a committee I'll be reporting to, watching every, you know, step we want to do right by the students. So
that's fantastic. So if we have listeners who are in high school and they're thinking, I want to do this, they can go to San Francisco State and they can get a degree in engineering or mathematics or whatever, and get a minor in personal defense and in learning how to teach this stuff. Is that what you're saying?
That's exactly what I'm saying. And it's interesting, I have people with all a variety of majors already in my personal defense class. And it's so interesting because I have had the biomed major who wants to learn how to teach ESD. I've had the mathematics major. I've also have the criminal justice major, the women and gender studies major, the health education. And very exciting, I have quite a few folks who are going into education and to teach in secondary schools. And they have asked it would be perfect for them to minor in ESD if they would like to teach it in secondary schools as well.
So this is super exciting, and it's a great segue too. But the first thing that's so exciting is that the more universities and secondary educational institutions that are teaching people how to teach this, the more people will have out there doing it. And like you say, these classes, when they suit the community, when they fit in with what's happening on the ground in that community, they make that much more impact. So if you have a biomed person and you have somebody who's going to go out and build bridges, like, cool, because everyone, this is like life, living life 101 is empowerment self-defense. So segueing into another thing that I want to talk with you about is, in one of our email exchanges, we talked a little bit about, we touched on the topic of teaching self-defense in K-12 schools and higher. And I want to look at this with you, this concept of empowerment self-defense training becoming a regular part of our U.S. educational system, just like reading, math, PE, science, history. I think you and I are on the same page about this. And for sure, this topic has come up in multiple of my podcast episodes, whether I'm sharing solo on a topic or you know, some topic or other, or if I'm in a conversation with another ESD professional, and it bears some more coverage because I want to talk with you about why is this important? Why is it not being taught in our educational systems, both K through 12 and higher? And why are we still talking about this? So I want to just pick it apart with you. And, you know, what's your vibe on this? Like, what are some things that you would want to say?
Well, you just said it a moment ago. To me, ESD training, it's life skills, and it's communication skills and conflict resolution. It's basic skills, a skill set everyone should have for the better of everyone. So I'm always baffled, but I have my thoughts on why people are so resistant to it. One, am I thinking, is it because we're saying self-defense? Should we, you know, is just the name that it's hard for people to get past? Why are we, is it implying then we all need defense against others? What are we saying with this? But I, from my work, boots on the ground, from teaching preschoolers, they're magnificent. They have, they know how to set their boundaries, and
they sure do.
It really, oh, it's lovely to see. Mm-hmm. And it's more to me, that's the real lesson. You know, I could read about it all day long, but that's where you really start thinking about how then they're socialized to ignore their intuition. They're socialized to allow people to cross the boundaries. And if we could start right then and there in preschool and validate, their feelings, about setting their boundaries. Well, you know, while learning, you know, how to be, you know, polite in society and say it with a certain way, I think it would be just so powerful. We'd really change. I think we'd really shift by degrees the way people communicate, the way people respect others. Not to jump to, I don't want to go too far in this direction, but really let's stop objectifying females and treating everyone with respect. So,
yeah, I think, you know, yes. And I don't know.
There's so much to say.
Like, how do we explain? You take your kids to swim because you don't want them to drown. Mm-hmm. We take first aid classes so we can help people if they're hurt. We learn CPR so we can, you know, help people who might be having an emergency. We learned how to stop, drop, and roll in schools. We do fire drills. Like, these are all things that we feel are important that are safety and health related. So this fits in that same category. And so there's something about the perception or the way we're marketing it or the way we're talking about it or the name, like you said. But I think when I've gotten objections, when I've gone to principals or counselors in schools, you can see them putting up walls, like they didn't even want to meet with me in several cases. And when I push, you know, and like, really, no, I just want to talk about it. Like, you know, let's just talk. What I find is there's this liability issue that they're worried about, that someone's going to get hurt. Someone's going to take the physical skills and use it against someone else and really hurt them, or that what we're teaching is we're teaching kids to be violent and that's not what they're about. And it's like, so yeah, no, it's about really teaching people to be able to stand up for themselves and share the peace that comes from having that confidence and that ability to stand up and speak out and set boundaries and communicate clearly. Like, these are life skills. It's not about violence. And I don't know how we break through that. I mean, if you, yeah, let's change the world and figure it out right now.
Well, it's so funny you're saying that, because I literally changed the name of how I'm approaching it. And this is my—
I wondered about that. Okay.
Okay, Sylvia, this is my experiment.
Truly,
I was originally Edge Self-Defense, and I love the name Edge because it's the edge. It comes from sports psychology. It's that moment when mind and body are totally in sync and you're in your flow. And edge self-defense to too many people was just violent. You know, it was all doors were closed. And this goes to really marketing, right? We could talk about marketing. Yeah. So then I change it to something even informally. I go to the students, go to my teenagers at the time. I had some sports teams, and they loved the idea of powering up. And so that's where Power Up came from. And now I'm trying it out to see if, is this more palatable for the schools? Is this more approachable? I will find out. I'm just like what you said. The other thing I've done for years is I will approach anyone and everyone who would like to talk about this, especially at schools. And I've been approached, but it's always, let's be hush hush. I've had counselors ask me to work with students after the fact, after they've been harmed. And I would do that and then say, how about I work with students before there's reported harm? You know, and because it's also educating people about the spectrum of violence. And that's when they'd say, okay, we'll think about it. And then they would not get back to me. So that's very frustrating. But I think it's better educating people that these are life skills. As I became a health coach, one, because I was interested in the topic. I had never, I wanted to just educate myself about better nutrition. And two, it just was struck me over the head, the intersection between safety and health, and health being holistic, meaning so many of my students are first generation. They come from a variety of backgrounds, including international students. And I could I almost want to say naively say, okay, everyone, over the weekend, get outside and get some fresh air, go for a walk or exercise. And that would be horrible for me to say, because I have students who can't do that. They don't have a safe environment to go outside and get fresh air. They're living in a food desert. All these things are connected. So I've started to approach schools with that this is a health issue. How about a segment? And I would show them a segment that could be in their health or social sciences course, just talking about the interconnection of safety and health for students. I want to also say in California, it is required for middle school and high school public schools, it's required that you have a segment called combatants. Now, I find this so ironic. They call it combatants. Really? However, just what you said, I know, just what you said a few minutes earlier, one of the big walls against ESD coming into the schools is, you're teaching the students how to strike one another. We're not allowed to have that in the school. I'm like, well, okay, first of all, change the name of your requirement for PE. And then two, there's a whole line of thought. I don't want to say the wrong date, but it's been around for decades. Physical education taught as a form of teaching personal and social responsibility. And like, that's exactly what, ESD can slot right in there very nicely. And we can teach these other skills that are oh so important, whether it's in the physical education course or it's in a health course, or let's just call it a life skills course.
Exactly.
For the students.
When my kids were in middle school and high school, my son's middle school, I started when he was in sixth grade volunteering, like, may I teach this empowerment self-defense class as part of PE after school on the weekend in the evening during lunchtime? I will come to you. It is free. It will be free. I like just like whatever, like knowing what we know about how at risk middle school age kids are to lots of different things. Let me in, let me at them. And I just hit one wall after another for two years. And finally, when my son was in seventh grade, so he'd been there sixth grade, seventh grade, in the spring of seventh grade, there was a rape. And then what do you know? They had me in the next weekend. You know, and there were 100 people in my class. And same with my daughter, 7 years. I'll do this for free. I'll do it, you know, an hour during lunchtime. Like, do it over the course of the whole year. I'll do it for free. I'll, like, you know, whatever works for you. 7 years. 7 years. Mm-hmm. I really made a concerted effort. I'm a mom here. Like, this is my thing. This is my jam. This is what I do. And my daughter was in 11th grade. And there's no guarantee that if I had taught at that school, that anything would have been different. But a young woman was off at college who had been in the upper. So my daughter was a senior. So it was someone who had graduated the year before. Self-defense situation. And she was murdered on her college campus. And these very impactful experiences for me leave me furious, so furious, and so wanting to know, like, how can we bridge this gap? I love that you're teaching at this higher level people who are excited about this and will have the words that I don't seem to have, or, you know, you will have the words, or Jocelyn Hollander will have the words, or, you know, someone is going to have the words to, like, so that there becomes this movement around this stuff, is my hope.
Well, I will, gosh, so many things to say to that. I truly believe in peer-to-peer teaching, and that's for that reason in part. So I feel if there's more ESD instructors out there of a younger generation who are then going to the schools, maybe they know better how to present it to the administration to get it in and then to connect with the students. I'm not surprised it's 7 years to get in. I was going to say your son's school, after that initial having you in for that one program that night, were you in again? Did they have invite you back? Or was it just a
they
one time?
Did. The next year I was back over the course of the year, like three times in the seventh grade. Yeah.
So what I found is, ironically, the private schools, it's usually after something's happened, which is so unfortunate. I've been invited in and invited back for a certain number of sessions. But what we're talking about here is, let's standardize it. It should just be part of the curriculum.
Right.
Learning these skills. And I'm just floored that the public schools, I, by the way, have never, ever been invited or allowed to teach at my children's public school, which I find fascinating. I've taught at schools all around, but that school, it's very interesting to me. And then I would have parents from that school ask me to teach groups of the students from that school privately, but the school itself didn't.
Yeah. Right. It wasn't official. It wasn't part of the official offering. Well, so we could talk about this forever. And I love your hopeful, like, this is peer to peer. You know, we're going to get people who speak the same language as other people. And, like, it's going to be a grassroots sort of thing that is still needing to happen. Honestly, I started this way back in the 80s thinking, oh, by the time I'm, you know, whatever, well, I won't be doing this anymore. There won't be any more need for it. Right. But I do have this question for you with your background, with what you're doing. What's your hope with all of this, that what you're doing, like, what's your hope for the future? Because you've got to have hope to do what you're doing.
I was about to say, I don't want to be gloom and doom. I truly believe this is going to take off. I do think we're going to look back one day and say, fantastic. You know, it's in the schools now. I feel like that's a drop the mic moment. And my joke, by the way, with my students who say I want to become an instructor is I would like someone to replace me.
Right.
I really do feel it will take, if we call it, for lack of a better word, grassroots. it will take hold, because for me, a lot of movement has always happened because of the students, because of a student speaking up. Yeah. And I didn't ask them to. It just happened. Sometimes I found out after the fact, right when I was first, my first round of submitting the ESD minor proposal at San Francisco State, I didn't even know a student of mine had written a letter to the provost saying that my class should be a requirement for all incoming freshmen. Yes. And therefore, you know, so I do, I've seen it happen. It's happened for me where the students speak up and they make a shift. I have a former student who's at City Hall right now at a fellowship and has been back in touch, which I imagine you probably have had. There's nothing more heartwarming than a student getting back in touch with you, telling you a story of using the ESD. And this student is at City Hall and saying, and I said, okay, you have the ear of some people. What do you want to do? So my hope is, I really do think in the future, this, there will have been a shift and this will be part of the curriculum. And I, whenever I step on the mat at the university, it truly, because I see those students consistently, gives me hope. It really almost fills me with joy. I leave so energized because whatever's going on in the world, with all that's going on in the world, these students really want to get along, want better communication, want to have these skills specifically, but in general, want a better world. And it's so energizing to be around that, a group of people who have the, they believe it's going to happen too. So I'm right there with them. And I do want to say quickly, I know we only have so much time, that also recently I've been doing a lot of this work in workplaces. And I was doing it as Power Up Moves myself, small orgs and nonprofits. Since COVID, I'm in the Bay Area. There's been a lot of violence. And they literally want to know how to, they had to go back in the workplace. How do I get to and from the workplace safely is how it started. And then I found myself in there helping them with workplace culture. Everyone's just getting used to working together again. Some people are still Zooming, some are there. This is all a very important part of ESD. And now I do work as a curriculum writer, facilitator, and trainer for PAVE Prevention, which is one of our colleagues, was organized and started by Arlene Lemus. And we've now worked with the first responders in Oakland, California. We're working with the library workers in Alameda. It's ESD is entering into all these different arenas and really helping improve them. So I feel very positive about the future.
I love that. It is. It's all encompassing. It affects so many areas of one's life. It's very true. So thank you for sharing that last bit too. And in wrapping up, I wanted to give you some time and space to talk about anything else you think is important that we haven't touched on yet.
Ooh, I feel like I was going to talk about how I truly feel it intersects with people's health as well.
Great. Talk about it.
Because I think that some people, I could just go on all day, Sylvia, but I love this. I feel so strongly about it. I just was literally telling a group the other day, it's more and more in the news, you know, the mind-gut connection. And then you start telling students, like, think about that. Think about, we talk about the feeling in our gut. A lot of times you think of intuition as well. How about you feed your intuition? How about, And people look at me like, are you, what? Are you crazy? I'm like, well, you know, eating better or more balanced meals affects your emotions. And that affects the regulation of your emotions, i.e. how you react, your adrenal stress response, how you react when you feel there could be a threat in your space. And just letting people have that kind of moment of realizing how this is all connected. truly, and just taking, it's very, EST is very, it's a more holistic approach to self-defense, and just coming at it from different perspectives, I think helps people realize the true reach of ESD and all of the good it can do in a person's life. So I feel that's very important. I think that gets overlooked quite a bit.
Amen. Preach
yeah.
it. Yes. yes, there. I'm having so much fun talking with you. And so you're coming back, I hope. I'm inviting you now to come back and we'll figure out what we're going to talk about.
Oh, with pleasure, Sylvia. Thank you.
Okay, cool. Yeah. And you know, really congratulations on the work that you're doing at San Francisco State. And listeners, you know, go and learn how to become an ESD instructor yourself. And my gosh, it sounds great. And listeners, also, just a reminder, you're going to find a link to Stephanie's webpage. And is it okay with you, Stephanie, if I share your LinkedIn profile with listeners?
Sure. Thank,
okay,
yes,
cool.
That's
so great. That will be a way that they can connect with you as well. And so you're going to find those links in the description to this episode. If you want to learn more, take Stephanie's courses, connect, you know, anything, you'll be able to do that right from that description. And Stephanie, really, thank you from all of us. Thank you for the work that you're doing and for the time that you took to speak with us today. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Sylvia. Thank you for having me. I'm very happy to be here.
You bet. It's affirmation time. This is how I end every self-defense class. It's kind of cheesy, but it's very cool, and this is how it works. We're going to do like a little call and response. If you can say this out loud, if you can repeat after me, do it, because it's important, I think, for you to hear your own voice. But if you can't, like if you're on a crowded subway or someplace where it's embarrassing, don't worry. You can also just say it inside your head. Okay? So I'm going to say something and you're going to repeat it after me. I'm going to give you space to do that. And at the end, we're going to say yes. Here we go. Repeat after me. I am worth protecting. I love myself. I belong. I deserve to take up space on planet Earth. I am a strong and powerful person. Yes! Woohoo! And hey, as a wrap-up, will you do me a favor? Will you do all the things that you do when there's a podcast? Like, will you tell your friends? Will you subscribe? Will you come back each week, communicate with me, review this podcast? Like, all those things to help get more bandwidth, help more people find out about it. That would be super awesome. Take a deep breath. You are amazing. Thank you for being with me. See you next time.